for WMRA News. I'm Bob Levakeep. Got a construction job you need done? Maybe you want to remodel your kitchen or even contract to build a new home. You may have a long wait, and we explore why. The campaign to end solitary confinement in Virginia's prisons is getting a boost from two state senators, one Democrat, one Republican. And it's an eventful week in Richmond with a new General Assembly and a new Republican executive branch being sworn in this weekend. And we survey the week in Virginia politics. This is the WMRA Daily for Friday, January 14th. Anne Frank and Emmett Till died 10 years apart and oceans away from one another. In a play performed this weekend at Eastern Mennonite University in Harrisonburg, the two meet face-to-face. WMRA's Randy B. Hagee reports.
Anne and Emmett brings the two slain teenagers together in a meeting beyond the grave, where they recount the cruelty and racial hatred that led to their deaths. The one-act play comes to EMU's Lehman Auditorium this Saturday at 2 p.m. and Sunday at 5 p.m. It's directed by Ezriana Prelo.
I'm hoping that people leave with a sense of social justice and seeing that hate comes in many forms. The stories of Anne and Emmett are different, but they're also very similar in that they both faced hate. And at the time, there wasn't many people speaking out. And so seeing what's going on in the world and being that person to speak out or to have the drive to change what's going on in the world today.
She took the cast to D.C. to visit the National Museum of African American History and Culture and the Holocaust Museum so they could better inhabit their roles.
Just getting a lot of that history piece in there about, you know, the world that was around these two teenagers and the world that they lived in.
Tickets can be purchased online or at the door. Attendance for each show is limited to 100 people and masks are required. For WMRA News, I'm Randy B. Hagee.
And you'll find a link to information about ticketing and more at WMRA.org. The housing market is still red hot, but many construction contractors say they're actually turning down jobs because they can't find enough workers. WMRA's Jesse Nadler explores why it's so difficult to find skilled builders in our area.
If you've tried to hire someone to come work on your place lately, you know it can take a long time for them to show up. A really long time. Helen Bissett owns the full-service design firm Curated Interiors in Lexington. She said it's not uncommon to have to wait 5 months for a plumber to show up on one of her job sites.
And now we're in the middle of a renovation where the plumbing hasn't been finished, and now we're in the winter, and so we're up against potentially pipes freezing and things like that.
On another renovation of a short-term rental property, the client, who's from Florida, had to bring in his own construction crew from Florida.
The dates that he was getting from local contractors was that it would be 2023 before they could even start.
A year before they could start.
The feedback that I've been getting from the contractors that we work with is that they just don't have enough people that are available or willing to work or stick with it. So, maybe they have three good people that they can rely on, but they really need 10.
The skilled labor shortage is a national problem. The Home Builders Institute estimates 2.2 million more workers need to be hired between now and 2024. Even though annual wages in these industries are solid, $50,000 on the lower end and upwards of $70,000 on the higher end. So what gives? Where are all the up-and-coming builders? Greg Sizemore heads up workforce development for Associated Builders and Contractors. A big part of the problem, he says, is cultural bias.
For decades, we've done a very good job of pushing everyone towards college and saying that the bar of success in life is whether or not you actually have a college degree. And we've done little or nothing to really promote the career technical side of the world. And I say that because, you can't go to school without somebody building the school first. You can't play in a football stadium unless somebody builds a stadium first.
In response to the labor shortage, Sizemore's association has doubled down on workforce development. More chapters for networking and training, 800 registered apprenticeship programs, but it may not be sufficient. The recently passed infrastructure bill, which includes billions of dollars for construction projects nationwide, may only expose further the need for workers.
For every $1 billion worth of spend on infrastructure, that employs over 5,000 craft workers. So we've got a lot of catching up to do.
Technical schools in the region are having a hard time meeting the demand from employers.
And we have absolutely seen a ton of increased request and demand from our local business partners that are looking to train folks or to recruit students that we're training.
Stephanie Carter is director of Charlottesville Albemarle Technical Education Center, or KTEC. For her, the prospect of getting paid to learn, graduating with zero debt, commanding a nice salary with benefits is a draw not enough young people are taking advantage of.
You know, we're just almost gross about it. But every turn, it's like, how can we get the message out? How can we get the message out? So we just are constantly beating the drum. If you're ever with somebody that's been in skilled trades, if you drive by a house that they built or that they had anything to do with, they'll tell you, I put the floor down in that house. I wired that house. And there's a huge amount of self-esteem and the success of seeing something that you built be there. And it's a tangible, substantial thing.
Paige Owens runs the Career and Technical Education Center at Rockbridge County High School. He says their building trades program is packed every year. And he's seen an increase in the number and variety of students seeking technical education. But that doesn't necessarily translate to a career in the trades after graduation. Because here's another reason for the labor shortage. Construction jobs can be tough.
Depending on what you're doing, sometimes it's hard on your body. You know, when they're in their 20s, it's not a huge deal. When they're in their 40s and 50s, it can sometimes become a big deal.
Owen says he doesn't know what the answer is, except to try to help kids find a career that's right for them.
We're trying to figure out the answers as well to try to help our local, not just help our local businesses and builders and what have you, but we're also, you know, trying to do what we can to help our kids and help get them into the right fit for a career that they want to do. And that's about it.
In the meantime, Americans will have to keep waiting on the plumber. For WMRA News, I'm Jesse Nadler.
You'll find links with much more information about the construction labor market at WMRA.org and on the WMRA app. More than $60 million in state loans are being provided to more than 2,500 affordable housing sites across the state. Governor Ralph Northam's office says the money will be used to provide housing options for Virginians with intellectual and developmental disabilities, as well as for low-income households. The funds will also cover energy efficiency updates to homes. The grants include nearly $8 million for housing in Albemarle County, more than $4 million for projects in Charlottesville, and more than $1.1 million for Harrisonburg. Outgoing Virginia Attorney General Mark Herring on Thursday reversed more than 50 legal opinions issued by predecessors during the Jim Crow and massive resistance eras that justified segregation, interracial marriage bans, and other racist laws. As a practical matter, the old legal opinions had been rendered moot by civil rights laws and Supreme Court cases outlawing discrimination. But supporters of Herring's action said it was important to formally renounce those opinions. Republican Jason Meares says putting victims before criminals will be his top priority once he's sworn in as Virginia's new attorney general on Saturday. BPM's Whitney Evans reports.
As a former Commonwealth's attorney in Virginia Beach, Jason Meares insists that there is no victimless crime. He accuses progressive prosecutors of leaving victims behind.
Part of our legislative package that we are going to propose would be a bill that said, listen, if you have a local prosecutor that's refusing to prosecute certain crimes, the chief of police and the sheriff's office can come to the attorney general's office and say, take a look at this.
The Office of Attorney General is chiefly tasked with defending the state in civil, not criminal cases. University of Richmond Law Professor Carl Tobias says the work tends to focus on liability and disputes within state agencies.
I've actually had people in that office tell me they don't see much difference in a vast run of cases, because if you think of some of the kind of litigation they're involved in, it doesn't have a political angle to it.
Meares has also vowed to push back on federal COVID mandates, including the requirement that larger businesses have their employees vaccinated. Some of his other priorities overlap with those of his predecessor, Democrat Mark Herring, including consumer advocacy and fighting human trafficking.
Whitney Evans reporting. Winsome Sears will make history when she's inaugurated as lieutenant governor on Saturday. Ben Pavier, also with VPM in Richmond, reports.
Winsome Sears is the first black woman to hold any statewide office in Virginia. She'll preside over the narrowly divided Senate and can break tie votes. She moved to the U.S. as a child from Kingston, Jamaica, went on to join the Marine Corps, lead a homeless shelter, and serve in the state legislature. The 57-year-old says she sees racism as one more hurdle in life.
America is progressing. She is. I'm proof.
Sears and Youngkin say their top priorities are slashing taxes and adding more charter schools. Saturday will mark the first time Republicans have held the highest office in Virginia since 2014.
Ben Pavier reporting. On the campaign trail, Republicans talked about expanding charter schools. Well, now that they control the House of Delegates, they feel they have a mandate to do so. But they will encounter opposition in the Senate, Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope reports.
One of the chief arguments against charter schools is that they divert taxpayer dollars from public schools. But Republican delegate Glenn Davis of Virginia Beach says that's simply not true.
Let's keep in mind that in Virginia, our charter schools are public charter schools. They are public schools. They are chartered by a governing entity, and they handle public school students. So there will not be any funds utilized that go to a charter school that is not educating a public school child.
Davis is now chairman of the House Education Committee, and the new Republican majority says expanding charter schools is a major priority of the 2022 General Assembly session. But assuming a bill passes the House, it'll land on the desk of Senator Louise Lucas of Portsmouth, chairwoman of the Senate Education Committee. She says she hasn't seen any data showing charter schools are any better than the current public schools.
If you will look at some of the charter schools, you're going to find that some of them are mostly students who are African American. I don't like separating students. I think there ought to be a blend. I think students ought to be able to have interaction with students other than students who look just like them.
If a bill expanding charter schools gets to her committee, she says it's a non-starter. Reporting from the Capitol in Richmond, I'm Michael Pope.
An effort to end solitary confinement in Virginia's prisons is getting a boost from Republican State Senator Jill Vogel. Along with Democrat Joe Morrissey, Vogel is co-sponsoring legislation that would limit its use. Advocates, including Rabbi Michael Knopf, point to studies showing the practice can lead to severe mental health issues.
This is state-sponsored torture happening right now as we speak on our watch and in all of our names. And it must end.
Officials with the Virginia Department of Corrections claim that they have already ended what they call restrictive housing. But critics say they've just given it a new name and they're pushing the General Assembly to act. A similar bill died in committee last year over concerns about costs. Well, finally today, it's an eventful week at Virginia's state capitol as one administration ends and a new one begins. Jeff Shapiro of the Richmond Times-Dispatch and Michael Pope got together in the halls of the Capitol to talk about what those changes mean.
This weekend, a new governor will be inaugurated. Jeff Shapiro, what can we expect from the new governor, Glenn Youngkin?
Virginia's 74th governor, the first Republican elected governor since 2009. No experience in government, and that slow-mo selection of his cabinet underscores this. This could be a factor in carrying out his agenda. For example, tax cuts, eliminating the grocery tax, delaying the increase in the fuel tax, which supports the transportation system. Now, the new governor could be facing his first big test hours after taking office. We're looking at a possible snowstorm of some consequence on Sunday. Youngkin's pick for transportation secretary says the new administration is preparing. The departing governor, Ralph Northam, has even drafted possible emergency orders for Youngkin. This was not, Michael, if you will, on Youngkin's oft-mentioned day one agenda.
So Virginia will be gaining a new governor and would also be saying goodbye to outgoing Governor Ralph Northam. What do we make of his time in office? What's the Ralph Northam legacy going to be?
Well, you know, Northam bid adieu Wednesday night, ends a consequential term, clearly one in which perhaps the events seemed to shape him more than he shaped events. There was a big landslide win for governor in 17, and that, with this unexpected near takeback of the House by the Democrats, allowed Northam to do what Terry McAuliffe tried four times but failed to do, and that was expand Medicaid and provide health care for more than 400,000 Virginians. The blackface moment in 2019 has rippled through his administration for months, if not years, driving that big racial equity push that included abolishing the death penalty, taking down Confederate statues, legalizing weed. The list is long and it is significant. Northam's going to be returning to his medical practice, almost certainly not getting back into politics. And one would note that of the 11 governors, at least whom I've covered, all of them at some point were mentioned as possible candidates for national office, but not Northam. And yet Northam has a record on which a lot of national Democrats would probably be proud to run on.
So also this week, the Virginia General Assembly gaveled into session. What can we expect from the 2022 General Assembly session?
Now, remember, Michael, we have, again, divided government. The Republicans are back in charge of the House. The Senate is barely under the control of Democrats. And with Glenn Youngkin becoming governor, that office will be flipping D to R. The House Republicans have made no secret of their interest in undoing the Democratic legacy. A flood of bills by Republicans that would undo the elimination of obstacles to voter access. The death penalty, some would like to see it restored. Restrictions on firearms, the Republicans would like to roll them back. Get rid of the increase in the minimum wage. And another idea that Republicans talk about, and of course, those tax hikes. All of this is going to come down to the ability of a divided legislature to get along. And one wonders, could all of these big Republican aspirations, including Glenn Youngkin's, come down to that single vote by which Democrats control the Virginia Senate?
All right. Well, that's all the time we've got for this week. We will be back here at the Capitol next week. My name is Michael Pope, and we've been joined by Jeff Shapiro of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Talk to you next week.
See you around the quad.
For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening. Stay safely connected, and I hope you enjoy your Friday.